House will come to order. Write that order of business of messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. This is message number 172, Senate file number 16, Aeronautics Programs, ayes 30, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 173, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file number 61, Revisers Bill, ayes 30, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 174, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 70, Land Possessor Duty to Trespasser, ayes 29, noes 1, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 175, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 72, Medicaid Benefit Recovery, ayes 29, noes 1, and Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 176, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below failed to pass the Senate third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file number 101, Child Abuse Reporting Penalties, ayes 14, noes 16, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 177, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate file number 125, Public Employees Requirements on Rehiring, dash 2, ayes 26, noes 4, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 178, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Senate file number 89, Veterinary Technicians, ayes 19, noes 11, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
We're at that order of business of reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 203, Health Benefit Exchange Study and Select Committee, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhart, Escobel, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stubson, Wallace, signed, Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 4, Education, to whom is referred House Bill 164, Alternative Schools, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Connolly, Freeman, Hunt, Northrop, Patton, Paxton, Pieperinen, Summers, and Teeters, signed by Representative Teeters, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 4, Education, to whom is referred House Bill 209, Remediation for Hathaway Recipients, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Connolly, Freeman, Hunt, Northrop, Patton, Teeters. Those who voted no, Representatives Paxton, Pieperinen, and Summers, signed, Representative Teeters, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, to whom is referred House Bill 182, Determination of Highway Rights of Way on Federal Lands, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Blevins, Campbell, Hutchings, Yeagy, Laux, McKim, Reeder, and Dave Zwanitzer, signed by Representatives Wanitzer, Division Chairman.
Brothers and sisters of the 62nd, as of 5 p.m. last night, we had 123 House bills still in process, either in committee or reported out on general file. We have today, 5 days next week, and next Monday, February 4th, for Committee of the Whole for House bills. You do the math on where we have to go if we want to get all of those bills considered. With that, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business of consideration of bills on general file.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House quickly resolve itself in the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Representative Walters.
Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 63. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 63 is introduced by the Minerals Committee, an act relating to public health and safety, authorizing the Department of Environmental Quality to submit an amended greenhouse gas regulation state implementation plan to the United States Environmental Protection Agency, authorizing the Department of Environmental Quality to promulgate new source performance standards for greenhouse gases and providing for an effective date.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Bill number 63 do pass. And I will be turning the explanation over to the Vice Chair of Minerals, but I wanted to give a little bit of history on this one because there's background that you need before you get to this bill. In 2010, greenhouse gases were determined to be regulated by EPA, and that was called an endangerment filing. Subsequent to that, when greenhouse gases are bracketed, they have lots of things in them, but they have some that are called fluoride gases, hydrofluorocarbons, petrofluorocarbons, and sulfur hexafluorides. Those are called fluoride gases. But there's another set that are called carbon dioxide, CO2, which is one of the things we have to work with, methane, and nitrous oxide. So there were two brackets that were determined at that time. Greenhouse tailoring rule, for those that are on the greenhouse gas as opposed to the fluorinated gases bracket, the rules were published in June of 2010, and it was to be a phased approach to allow states to develop and implement permitting infrastructure. Recall that in June, we were not a year-round legislature, we were out of session. And we had appealed some of the timing and those kinds of issues with what had been brought forth by EPA. In December 22nd, the deadline for DEQ happened, and it was a requirement to meet the SIP, State Implementation Plan, regulation for greenhouse gas. But we had on our books, and part of the reason we couldn't move forward without additional legislation, is what was called Wyoming Statute 3511-213, which prevented us from regulating under the Kyoto Protocol greenhouse gases. So we were caught in a dilemma between what was an existing statute that we were still living under, and it limited what we could do. The appeals that we went in with were not sufficient for the feds, so the 22nd was the deadline of December, and then on the 2nd of January, they came out with the federal implementation plans, which says that those plans were in place to go no matter what happened if people didn't conform to what the federal government wanted, and so we had what you'd call a dilemma. During 2012, legislative session, we passed Statute 3511-213E-K, Senate File 86, was to develop regulations that we would have to put in place, but there were still some issues out there that were not settled with the federal government. So we stayed the regulations affecting the states until the third piece of the legislation was completed or the federal court issued a final judgment on Wyoming's appeals. That didn't happen, so that brings us to today. Last year, the greenhouse gases were adopted on December 19, 2012. However, the rules were not yet efficient or effective pending legislation that we were going to do in 1963. I know that's a long history, but those are the pieces that we were trying to put together. What was a change in the law based on a Supreme Court decision that CO2 was a greenhouse gas, and the greenhouse gas regulations went to EPA. EPA came out with some rules, and they came out when we were not in session, but we had an existing law on the books that we had to work around. So it was kind of a complex issue for background, and I thought you needed to know that. But what happened prior to where we are today, the people that were involved in this sat down and worked out a solution for the state of Wyoming, held it in abeyance until we got final decisions on some of the appeals and some of the other processes that were going on to change the status. That leads you to our bill today, and I'm going to ask the vice chair of our Good Minerals Committee to explain the bill that puts us in fact in place to do the job that we are required to do. With that, I'll stand down and turn it over to Kasparek.
Representative Kasparek.
Mr. Chairman, with that very good history by the chairman of the Minerals Committee, there's not much more to add to this except a few things. You will see that the impact of the changes in the bill occur on page 2 with the deletions that occur on lines 10 through 17 and the additional information. And essentially what this bill does is allows these rules to become effective. They have been written and they are no more stringent than the federal rules and focus on large industrial sources of greenhouse gas emissions. Once these become effective, and that's where we are now, we can submit the rules changes and required documentation to the EPA and as a state implementation plan or SIP. At that point, the DEQ will also request that the EPA replace their federal implementation plan with our Wyoming plan. So upon approval from the EPA, a Wyoming greenhouse gas SIP will return primacy for permitting greenhouse gases to the state, and it will eliminate the need for dual permitting by companies that are submitting permits. So it will streamline the process for them. So unless you have questions on those changes, I would call for the question on the bill.
Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a good bill. We need to pass this. One of the most important items that this bill provides, which was not yet mentioned, was it will allow the state of Wyoming to have primacy in the greenhouse gas regulation. And for those of you that don't know what primacy is, that puts us in charge of our own rules and regulating the greenhouse gases here locally, which I think everybody in this body would like.
Chairman Lockhart.
I would just thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to make one comment. That was the most important part of it, and in my run-up, I missed that. I was glad to have the help from the good representative from Cheyenne.
Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 63 do pass, please say aye. All those opposed, no. Hearing no opposition, House Bill 63 has passed Committee of the Whole. Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I have privilege of the floor?
Go ahead.
I'd like to introduce a couple folks from Diamondville, Wyoming, and that are here to observe. Deb is a nurse and has been down here with the Nursing Association. So please welcome Deb and Jay Phillips for me.
The next bill for our consideration will be House Bill 65. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 65, as introduced from the Minerals Committee, an act relating to public health and safety, creating the Municipal Solid Waste Landfill Remediation Program, creating criteria for the program, creating the Municipal Solid Waste Landfill Remediation Account, providing qualifications for expenditures from the account, providing for reimbursement for the cost of remediation and monitoring activities as specified, providing a definition, providing rulemaking authority, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, we have two reports here. To Committee Number 9, Minerals, Businesses, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 65, Municipal Solid Waste Landfill Remediation, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye: Representatives Byrd, Kennedy, Greer, Kasparic, Larson, Lockhart, Reeder, Summers, and Winters, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman. Further reviewed by Appropriations on House Bill 65, as they report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendment. Those who voted aye: Representative Burkhart, Escobel, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stubson, and Wallace, and signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 65 do pass. And I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment and turn the explanation of that over to the good Chairman of Appropriation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, I move Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 65 and ask for your adoption. Just quickly to explain it, if you'll turn to page 14 of the bill, Section 3, Paragraph A, is a $40 million appropriation from the SPRA account. This account has the landfill account now today, pending approval of the budget, has $45 million in the account. Not sure why this was put in by the Standing Committee. So we deleted all of Paragraph A. There's $45 million in the account. The key part of this bill, it sets up the program, and it'll take over a year to write the rules. There won't be a penny spent out of this from this program in at least a year. So certainly don't need $40 million, certainly not from the SPRA account. And I think we're working on a long-term funding stream, so we won't be here every year looking for general funds for landfills. So with that, without any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment, I don't have one question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Representative Goggles.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I would ask the Appropriations Committee Chairman if the deletion is on, in terms of our goldenrod, could you show us on the goldenrod where that deletion would occur?
Representative Harshman.
If you looked on your goldenrod, and it's on, I don't have it in front of me, but it's at where this proposal was from, you'd have to look back on the, I think there's a SPRA account balance on the goldenrod. It might even be in your data book. Let me look here. Last page are water accounts. And so it's, if you look on, it's on page 5, and it's in the spending policy reserve account. And I hope at some point we'll have a bill where we can, I know we will have proposals where we will be able to talk about the permanent mineral trust fund, how we set it up as a Harvard trust, 5% of the rolling average. Anything that might exceed 5%, we put into a reserve account, and when it matches a certain percentage, 75% of the SPRA, we tip it back in and inflation-proof it. This is taking it out of the reserve account. And if we're going to allow this eventually someday to allow the SPRAW to work to guarantee the 5%, we're going to need this money in that account. So this is not the appropriate place to appropriate money from, and we want to do it straight up front. We have the money up front to do it, and like I say, we have $45 million right now in the municipal solid waste landfill account to answer that question. So, and then just last thing on this. The estimated liability is about $220 million. So I think as a grant, it's about 75% state. So about $168 million. We have $45 million in there right now. We're going to probably have to come up with about $5 million a year over the next 20 years, and we think we've got a solution we'll talk to you someday about, later about, is a long-term solution to provide that $5 million per year so we're not back asking for general fund dollars every year. So with that, I'd ask for your adoption standing committee amendment.
Representative Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would only comment that with this haircut, we still agree with the appropriations chair. And urge your support.
You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. Standing committee amendment number one has passed. We are now back on the bill. Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would turn the explanation over to the good representative from Washakie.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief, try to. This goes back to 2006. In terms of what are we doing with our municipal solid waste and the pollution to the groundwater that has come out of it, this body of the legislature in a whole has worked on this for 6 or 7 years, and it's been a process with legislation coming every year. And I actually have the honor to take and bring this in front of you and take a little bit of credit for all the hard work of those other folks. This is the municipal solid waste landfill remediation bill. This is our solution on how we're going to remediate our leaking landfills around the state of Wyoming. And again, just a little bit of a background. I think it took a while for the state of Wyoming, the legislature, the local governments to realize that there, in fact, was that we had a problem. I mean, I don't think people wanted to realize we had a problem. Then we realized we had a problem. Then the next step is we had to go into the monitoring process, in which as we go through the monitoring process, we found out to the extent we had that problem. Then we came back, and I think I was on board around this time. We started to look at how are we going to prioritize the problem and then move forward with dealing with it. This was set up with a subcommittee out of Minerals that took a tremendous amount of testimony and worked with the Citizens Advisory Group, which were the people on the ground with these landfills and the engineers that were all involved. This bill is a culmination of all that work and gets us going down the path of fixing this problem to our environment in a way that I think is real and will work for the state of Wyoming. With that background there, what this does, right now we do have a list of all of our landfills that have problems, and it's a long list. And we've got them prioritized. And with the passage of this bill, the appropriation that we talked about, and once we get the rules and regulations put in place, we will start to have a mechanism in which we can go in and help the municipalities remediate the problem and move forward. And hopefully we can get all of these cleaned up in a reasonable period of time. So with that said, what the bill does is create the Municipal Solid Waste Landfill Remediation Program, created to clean up our landfills. The criteria for the program is, one, DEQ will select, working from their list, they have 11 highly prioritize the landfills on this account. We gave some flexibility, realizing that we may not want to just go and target number one on that list and pour all the money into that, but rather we wanted to give some flexibility to try to get the most bang for our buck. A little bit of that flexibility you'll see drafted into this legislation. What this requires is for an operator to enter into a contract with DEQ. DEQ will then come in and either contract with third parties, or there's the option to contract with the operator. And on a 75-25% match, that is, it'll be a 25% as the good chairman likes to say, skin in the game, from the operators, they'll come in and take the remediation activities, whether that's capping, continued monitoring, more sophisticated programs. It's all to be contemplated on what we need to do. There are the requirements in here. One is that they'll cease disposal into these leaking cells or into the leaking landfills. That only makes sense. If it's polluting, just stop doing that. And that they'll come up with a 25% component. And something that I felt was very important as we went through this process is also to look at in accountability, the full cost of municipal solid waste, which I think we're all starting to realize. And that cost of that, you'll find on page 5, begins the operations, the monitoring, recycling, composting, and other diversion activities, closure, post-closure, all the way down through. You need to count and put into the factor to run these landfills what it really costs for that ton of municipal solid waste. That accountability is there. I'm getting a signal to move. All right, I'll get to moving. Also, I think important to note, as this is a question that came up quite a bit, is we do have facilities in this state of Wyoming that have done it right, and they've done it right without the assistance from this program. But some of them still have leaking cells or some components of that. What is set aside is $4 million. That $4 million can be applied for those landfills that have done it correctly to help with remediation costs on other cells that are leaking. And what they can do is use a portion of that $4 million to match their 25% up to $1 million per facility. So that overall is the program. I said, to the extent any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them. I think I'll be able to.
Representative Nicholas?
I just want to say that he might talk like a country lawyer, but he sure doesn't dress like one.
Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a few questions. One was, if perhaps before the next reading of this, if that list could be distributed just so we could all look at where we're at on that list in our communities. In particular, my community, what we do is our landfill was closed, and so we actually we were hauling our garbage to Sublette County. And so all of our garbage actually leaves the county. But the old landfill in my county is closed, but it's leaking. We put it on the SPET ballot, special excise tax, and it passed. $14 million the voters have approved in my community to remedy the situation. So $14 million. What I'm curious about is, so here's a community that's doing the right thing. They actually decided it was so serious they needed to hurry and get it done. And so they went ahead and taxed themselves. So there's a tax now, a sales tax, an extra penny in my county to pay for this because they didn't want to wait anymore for DEQ. Is there an ability to get paid back, to be reimbursed for the expenses that you're going to? Because here's my concern. If you're not going to reimburse communities like mine, this is only for the benefit of those communities that were not planning ahead, that were actually maybe almost the bad actors are getting awarded, that the worse that you're planning, the worse that you were at actually maintaining, that you're actually going to gain from this. So that was my first question, was the reimbursement part for those communities that are doing the right thing. And the second question was, I don't understand on page 9, the bottom, subsection D, it says reimbursement of this section shall not exceed. And so it says not exceed $4 million. So I get that the most you can get out of this program is $4 million. So in my situation, to fix ours, it's going to cost $14 million. The most I can get back from the state is $4 million. But then I read this subsection 2 on the next page, on page 10. I don't understand what that does on the next page. Could you maybe explain how that works?
Representative Greer?
Well, I'd be happy to. And let me take the first question, or the second question first. Okay. What we looked at was recognizing the issues surrounding your first question. We said there'd be $4 million. We realize that there are people who have done things correctly, but that they still are on the list. They have remediation to do. And this was discussed a great deal. But what we said is they can then apply for the remediation, turn over that responsibility under this program, and use up to $4 million to be applied towards their 25% match. That was the compromise to reward those people who have been started doing things correctly. Now back to the first question, and you're not the first individual or first entity to say, well, can we get some money back? You know, we did the right thing for the environment. Why don't you give us some money back? And the fact of the matter is it's bad policy. And while I've been in arguments over this, it's the same way as the district that bonded to build their new school. And then we come in with the community facilities or the school facilities and started building schools for people. We didn't go give refunds to pay that back. It's a policy consideration. And what I would say, to get a copy of that list, you're going to find that on that list are municipalities that have invested a great deal of money in their landfills in the last couple of years, and that they are still have problems, or they have cells that are leaking. And so they've invested a great deal of money into new facilities to do it correctly, and yet they're going to qualify under this program to help clean up those cells or those components of their landfills. They can put them under the remediation program and take advantage is a bad term, but to use this program. So I hope that's an explanation that makes some sense and answers the question.
Chairman Gingrey.
And I don't mean to be dense, I'm sorry. So if I understood you correctly, I can get $4 million back. A total of $4 million can come back to someone who's already started. Because here's my concern is, this bill, by the way it's written, if you're not going to pay back, you're encouraging, the policy statement you're making is ignore the DEQ. When the DEQ sends you notices to your landfill to say clean up, you should ignore those, and you should tell DEQ to go away, which, you know, a lot of them did. And DEQ always said, oh, we're going to come get you. We're now learning DEQ, that was the smart thing to do, was to ignore DEQ, because if you ignore them and tell DEQ to go away, you get the benefit at the end. But if you listen to DEQ and said, oh, my gosh, something's leaking, I better hurry and get something done, now you're going to be penalized for actually complying with DEQ. It seems to be bad public policy to do it this way.
Representative Greer?
I don't have any response to that. That's his opinion on it. I mean,
Representative Larson?
It's also important as you read through this bill to look at the acreage that's involved in this. It's in this piece of legislation, there's two bills that are coming up. This one that we're talking about now, which is small acreage, because throughout the state we have a lot of small landfills that were left abandoned, weren't taken care of, that was left under the jurisdiction of no man, and they're trying to get these cleaned up and then have the ability to convert to transfer stations. So that's why you really have the limited amount of funds, in this bill. The other bill, you'll see Harshman really squeal. And then, but we've got, we have to address the problems on landfills that were abandoned, were done away with, they, you know, throughout the state, on the reservation, off the reservation. And so we're trying to address these and set a fund aside that we can get these cleaned up, help these small municipalities or these small areas be able to convert to a transfer station and start taking care of their waste in an appropriate manner. We're not trying to penalize anybody for, but it's just a result of the situation that the state's inherited over over many decades of inappropriately disposing of their waste. Thank you.
Representative Greer.
Yeah, you know, before we vote, I'll make one more comment on this, and then I'll be quiet and get us to a vote. I think, as I have observed this and met with a couple of municipal solid waste boards in my district, which, by the way, this bill does not really benefit my district because we are very, very low on the list, so this is not special interest to me, something I was assigned and worked diligently on. What I found was that there was a learning curve within the state of Wyoming that you just can't load up the pickup and go out and dump your waste in a draw. There's a learning curve here in terms of the cost that is associated with dealing with municipal solid waste. And a lot of what's going on, I call are the sins of our fathers, in that we have these problems around the state that we are now realizing is really an environmental issue. And the legislature, for the last 6 years, has steadily taken a position that this is a state issue. This is an issue that we are going to have to help, in particular, our small communities. And not all communities have a high assessed value and the ability to do what some of the smaller communities do. This is a state problem. That's what has been recognized. And I really think the policy decision that the state of Wyoming is going to assist in getting this done and getting it done in an orderly fashion has already been made. And with that, I'll be quiet and ask for a favorable vote to move this forward.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 65 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. House Bill 65 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 66. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 66 is introduced by the Minerals Committee, an act relating to public health and safety, creating the Municipal Solid Waste Facility Cease and Transfer Program, creating criteria for the program, creating Municipal Solid Waste Facility Cease and Transfer Accounts, providing qualifications for applicants to receive funds under the program, providing authority for the State Loan and Investment Board to award funds under the program, providing for the Department of Environmental Quality to administer the program, providing that the department shall develop a general permit as specified, providing assistance for closure of small landfills, requiring financial responsibility of municipal solid waste to the Department of Environmental Quality, providing ineligibility for state funding for failure to perform financial responsibility actions as specified, providing rulemaking authority, providing full reports, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, again, we have two reports here. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 66, Municipal Solid Waste Facilities, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye. Representatives Byrd, Cannaday, Greer, Kasparik, Larson, Lockhart, Readers, Summers, and Winters, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman, further reviewed by the Appropriations Committee on House Bill 66, who respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Burkhart, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, Stubson, Wallace, one excuse. That was Representative Escobar, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Lockhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Bill Number 66 do pass. And I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment and would like to use the same procedure on processing of this and turn the explanation of the Standing Committee Amendment over to the good Chairman of Appropriations.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 13, members, you'll see the two appropriations for this cap and transfer account. On page 13, section 2, on paragraph A, line 6, you can see there was $3,750,000 appropriated from the general fund, and that is for the grant account of this act. We reduced that to $1 million and changed the fund source to that new account that we've created, the solid waste municipal landfill account. So as you look at the amendment, you can see that it's appropriated from that account, and that's where it should come from. That's why we've been saving that money. And then members on paragraph B, that $1.25 million, that was general fund money. We reduced that amount to $500,000 in the loan account, also from the solid waste landfill account. So stand for any questions or call for the vote on that.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has passed. We're now back on the bill. Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll explain this bill as well. This is the one of two bills that do work hand in hand. The list that I referenced, I will get that. The chairman will help remind me. We'll get that out and delivered to folks. I think that is a good suggestion. What we have within the state, and the number always seem to bounce around, but I've got it locked down at about 15 landfills that are in small communities that are prime targets to cease operations, cap, which is the proper remediation technique, and engage in a transfer to a larger or a regional landfill. And the fact of the matter is it's an economies of scale issue, and the cease and transfer component of this really is targeted at getting and attacking that list and starting to remove some of the sites on that list by providing the assistance, the incentive, to not continue to drag out a landfill that has problems, but to get it, to get its use terminated, to get it capped, and the wherewithal to get it transferred. Now, two key components of this bill. One is, in order to qualify under this program, which is again a 75-25 program, is that the entity that's involved has to come back with a full cost accounting. They have to factor in the cost of running that transfer station, the cost of the ongoing monitoring for the landfill that's been, the use has ceased and it's been capped. Also factored into that under the GAAP accounting is the replacement of the equipment associated with the transfer station. This is an incentive to try to get some of these closed. We heard a lot of testimony through the last 2 years from small communities who really wanted to get this done and just couldn't seem to get there. Second component of this I wish to point out is that, and one that I'm kind of proud of, is instead of the testimony went between $125,000 to $200,000 for the engineering design and study to cap these small landfills, we will have the DEQ develop a general permit that these small landfill operators can use to apply for without going through that cost. And that's, folks, that's simplifying the regulation and the process just a little bit and to help us get down the path with it. So with that, I'll take any questions. If there's no questions, I'd like to move this forward.
Question being called. all those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 66 do pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. House Bill number 66 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration will be House Bill 85. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 85, as introduced by Representative Moniz, an act relating to municipalities repealing extraterritorial jurisdiction of ordinances, providing conforming amendments, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, of Committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 85, Municipal Jurisdiction, Extraterritorial Authority, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Gay, Green, Paxton, Petroff, and Dan Swanitzer. Those who voted no, Representative Blickery, Byrd, Kirkbride, and excused was Representative Berger, signed by Representative Blickery, Vice Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Representative Berger?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that bill, House Bill number 85 do pass. Mr. Chairman, what we have before us are Standing Committee Amendment 1, which I will have Representative Petroff explain, and I'd like to dispense with that first, and then we'll turn it over to the prime sponsor, Representative Moniz, to explain the bill, and also we have a Committee of the Whole Amendment 1 that will need to be taken care of. Thank you.
Representative Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So to explain this amendment, the easiest thing to do, look in your inbox, and the good sponsor from Albany County of the bill has put something in there that says House Bill 85, and that's the easiest way to understand the bill because the bill itself doesn't have on there the part that's coming out of the statutes, which is really the bulk of the meaning of the bill. So if you're looking at that sheet, what we're looking at is eliminating really two concepts from the statutes. And one is that Romanet 1, which is eliminating municipal jurisdiction over places within 5 miles of corporate limits. And I'll let the sponsor explain it. But the testimony supported that, and so the committee left that in or took it out, whichever way you want to look at it. It was Romanet 2 that we had more concerns with. It was a little more difficult. We definitely agreed with the concept that the will of the municipality shouldn't supersede the will of the county. But there were a whole lot of questions about how this was being used around the state, and we were nervous about pulling the plug out. And there are a lot of ways that it's being used, I think, that the counties don't object to. And so I think that the amendment we put in, which leaves that Romanet 2 in, combined with the Committee of the Whole amendment that you'll hear in a minute, will achieve both of those things. We'll not be pulling the rug out, and we'll also be giving a little safeguard to the county to be able to override any decisions they disagree with. And very, very briefly, just a couple of examples of how this jurisdiction can be used. We have a lot of places in the state, or I shouldn't say a lot of places, but certainly a few places, where there are islands of county within municipalities. And counties cannot pass ordinances, municipalities can. So, for instance, there might be an ordinance that everybody in the island is in favor of, but they would not be able, the town would no longer be able to enforce those ordinances within that island. There are other uses like mosquito abatement or, you know, parade permits, a lot of different things that that maybe you don't want to have to run to get a memorandum of understanding every time these things come up. So, again, it might make a little more sense when the Committee of the Whole amendment is presented as well, but I would encourage your aye vote on the Standing Committee amendment as well as the Committee of the Whole amendment.
Chairman Gingrey?
I just needed some clarification. So if we vote for the Standing Committee amendment, you're voting that we're getting rid of the 5-mile health jurisdiction, you're leaving in the half-mile ordinance jurisdiction. So the standing committee actually does delete the 5-mile health and quarantine.
Representative Petroff?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, that is correct. Thank you for that clarification.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has passed. We are on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. Chairman Berger?
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 85 and turn it over to Representative Moniz to explain the... Oh, excuse me. The tall man behind me.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I went down this path with the sponsor of the bill. Realized that this was a bigger issue than what I thought. The committee...
Representative Greer, one moment. Would you please move this amendment since you are one of the sponsors? The chairman cannot move that as she is not a sponsor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 85 and ask for your favorable consideration. Getting back to it, this half-mile buffer is our jurisdiction around a municipality truly is a turf war. And we have heard lots of discussion concerning regulation without representation, I think was the coined term. And what I try to do with this amendment is say, okay, cities, you have this jurisdiction, and I think this is important from a lot of different legal aspects, but you can assert your jurisdiction. That means that there is that jurisdiction. However, it will give the Board of County Commissioners the ability by resolution to repeal or revoke all or part of that jurisdiction. The goal here is to get communication between these two governmental entities. And in those situations that maybe the county doesn't quite have the tools in the box to provide the necessary regulation or oversight, the city can do so, and the counties can look at that and say, yes, that's appropriate for this municipality to be regulating or overseeing this component of the usage of that half-mile zone. So I really feel as if this amendment brings some balance to what we were trying to achieve overall and would encourage you to vote aye.
Representative Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Without this amendment, the House Standing Committee amendment would not be tolerable. But with the Committee of the Whole amendment, I think we can live with this as long as nobody peddles on it anymore. I think we can deal with it.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I promise not to do that. Ladies and gentlemen, in the 60-second, I would concur that this is a good and friendly amendment to House Bill 85.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question to the sponsor of the amendment, I guess, is whether or not this negating of the ability for cities to have jurisdiction, does that extend to platting jurisdiction too? So we would have, or is that some other part of the code?
Representative Moniz?
No, it doesn't. If you look at 3412.103, that deals with platting and basically gives the city a 1-mile buffer in which they negotiate with the county on all zoning.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no.
No.
Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 has passed. Is there any other discussion on the bill?
I assume we want to discuss the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now we can discuss why the bill's here to start with. Throughout the year, we've researched this, and actually 15-3202 was we found that in the statute books clear back to 1895, when there were no health departments and mayors and communities were trying to prevent cholera or other types of communicable diseases. We now are into the current times, and we have a Wyoming State Department of Health with state health officers and as well as county officers, so they can extend their jurisdiction into these other counties and cities or whatever to control those kinds of diseases or whatever related to health that this bill addresses. There was some rub as far as the counties extending out 1/2 mile into the corporate limits of the city. And if you read that, it really kind of concerns me the way it's written. In all matters accepting taxation within 1/2 mile of the corporate limits of the city. That takes care. That's broad. So we wanted to eliminate it both. To be honest with you, the argument is that there are other statutes that cover the issues that the communities are concerned about. But with the Committee of the Whole Amendment, I think we can live with that. Really, basically, Mr. Chairman, that is the issue, and as long as we can move forward on this with the Committee of the Whole Amendment, I believe we can live with this. So with that, I'd stand for any questions.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Berger's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill Number 85 do pass, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no.
No.
House Bill Number 85 has passed Committee of the Whole. Our next bill for consideration is House Bill 150. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 150 is introduced by Representative Dave Zwanitzer, an act relating to motor vehicle titles, amending bond requirements for obtaining certificates of title and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, in Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 150, bonds for certificates of title, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Blake, Blevins, Campbell, Hutchings, Yeagie, Larson, Laux, McKim, and Dave Zwanitzer. Signed by Representative McKim, Vice Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Representative McKim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 150 do pass. And I turn over the explanation of the bill to the Chairman of Transportation.
Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, ladies and gentlemen, an easy bill finally this afternoon. This bill simply raises the bond title from $600 to $2,500. And if you're asking why we need to do this, about 4 years ago, the executive branch of the country was making an effort to get all the older cars off the streets. And to do that, a lot of those vehicles were not able to have titles that were locatable. And this is an effort that you can get a bond for it that assures that you will be able to provide title, and you make that exchange. And as you saw, it went through committee 9-0, and I would ask for any questions or call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Representative McKim's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill Number 150 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, say no. House Bill Number 150 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 120. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill Number 120 is introduced by Representative Gingrey, an act relating to game and fish, specifying that restitution penalties for game violations include potential economic values of wildlife, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, the Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 120, Game and Fish Violations-Restitution, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blevins, Davison, Freeman, Gay, Halverson, Hutchins, Yeagie, P. Perinen, one excuse, that's Representative Crone, signed by Representative Davison, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Representative, or Chairman Davidson?
I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 120 do pass, and I'll turn the explanation of the bill over to my good friend from House District 23.
Representative Davidson, will you also move the standing committee amendment, please?
I'm sorry. I didn't have that on there. Okay, and I also move I further move the adoption of the standing committee amendment. And I'll turn that over to my good friend from House District 23 to explain as well.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll explain the standing committee amendment as I explain the bill. Here's what happened. The first big felony trial to go on with wildlife happened this past year. If you recall, we created that new felony last year. They do the big trial, and it was in a county in the basin. I can't remember which county it was. Anyway, they do the big trial. They get the guy, and they go in for the sentencing hearing, and they ask for restitution. The judge rules that the way the legislature wrote the restitution law for game and fish violations is lacking some words. And because we were lacking some words, the judge said, I have to revert to Title VII restitution to determine the value of the wildlife lost. So to understand this, Title VII is where most restitution for most crimes. So if I went over and hit you and you had a pair of glasses on, I'm going to be charged with a crime, for hitting you. And I'm going to have to pay a fine probably. It's going to be a misdemeanor. I have to pay a fine. That's my punishment. That's the part I'm being punished for. That's the part I have to pay a fine. But also, the judge will say, but you have to pay for the glasses. How much do those glasses cost? And let's say the glasses cost $200. That's my restitution. That's restoring my victim back to where they should be. Okay, so with wildlife, that gets very interesting because let's say I'm a poacher and I shoot a mule deer. How much is the value of that mule deer? And who's the victim? Who am I paying? His parents? Who do I send the money to? So the question becomes, how do you determine that? So what we did, what the legislature did years ago, they said in Title 23, so again, I was explaining to you restitution as it is in Title 7, which is most of your normal crimes, but over in Title 23, which is where we do game and fish, the statute already reads, in addition to the penalties imposed under this section, any person violating this section may be required to make restitution to the state. So in this case, the legislature is saying the victim is the state, for the value of the wildlife taken in violation of this act. This is an important part. In an amount determined by the court based upon the recommendation of the commission. Okay, so the Game and Fish Commission has to come up with recommendations, and they've done that. They did this long economic study based on scientific methodology, and they look at five categories: expenditure per hunter, angler too, average license revenue, management cost per animal, average taxidermy cost, average outfitted trip cost. And they take all those different factors and they come up with a number for each animal. And you can actually pull up this list. It ranges all the way from the low at $125 restitution if you kill a beaver out of season or whatever, or all the way up to I think a mule deer is $3,000, and the high is like a mountain goat at $15,000. Okay, so the more rare they are, the more money you're going to pay. So if you poach a mountain goat out of season, you're going to get the fine plus the restitution. And the commission has determined that that's about $15,000. Okay. So what happened in this case, it goes to the judge. They say, judge, here's the commission's recommendation based on their policy based on scientific method. Judge looks at it and says, boy, that's not how I read that statute. I think you have to go back to Title VII. Title VII says restitution is based on pecuniary actual damages, what the judge referred to in his opinion as the blue book value of a deer. And they got into an argument about who the victim would be, and do you go and you pay, you know, the taxidermist, the outfitter, the sporting goods store, and those types of things. So that's how we got to this situation. And Game and Fish said, boy, it'd be nice to get this cleaned up. So the bill, all it does is it sticks in the word on page 1, line 14, sticks in the word economic restitution to the state. And then it says for the, and we added in potential economic value of the wildlife taken. So we're adding in the word economic in one spot and potential economic in the other spot. In committee, the committee decided to take out the word potential, and I actually stood up and said, oh, I think that'd be fine. After I left, Game and Fish got hold of me and said, no, that's not going to work. You got to have the word potential, because that's how our scientific method, our formula works, is based off of what is the potential economic value. That's how they make up that list that tells you what each animal is worth. So based on that, I would urge you to vote no on the standing committee amendment. Leave in the word potential, and that's the bill.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just out of curiosity, what did in this trial, I was involved with the law that we passed for the poaching. What did the guy pay, and what should he have paid?
Representative Gingrey, you want to answer that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My understanding from the case, I think he poached three mule deer, and the mule deer I think is worth $3,000 each. Yeah, and he paid substantially less because the judge really couldn't come up with a value, and it was an extremely small amount that he paid. Now, he also paid a fine. Let me make that clear. He paid a fine, but the restitution was lower.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm struggling, I guess, with this whole notion of potential restitution based on what a taxidermist might have gotten. It seems to me like we are, you know, that as far as the state is concerned in the restitution area, about all that you could legitimately include is whatever the license would have been if it was handled properly. But for the state to demand restitution for the possibility that somebody might have this deer stuffed, might spend the night in town, might do all these things, I just think that's a step too far, and it's really putting a kind of a blank check in the hands of an agency that tends to run off with blank checks, in my humble opinion, from time to time. So I think I'm going to vote against this standing amendment and probably vote against the bill.
Representative Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm rising in favor of the amendment. And perhaps the other country lawyers can express their opinion on this. I don't think you can establish damages by potential in terms of actual damages and what you're assessing. I just don't think you can do that, and so I think you're actually making the bill either unenforceable or unconstitutional by doing this. So I would go with the amendment.
Chairman Gingrey.
And this is more just of a policy decision. If we don't move ahead with this bill, and that would be fine, understand we probably will stop asking for restitution, because there really is, if you can't determine the potential economic value of a wildlife, there really is no restitution amount. So you still get the amount for the fine, so that would be fine. So it's not the end of the world. But understand that what Game and Fish, I guess, looks at it a little bit differently. I mean, they look at it as that the wildlife is in control by the state, that these are the state's wildlife, and that when you remove wildlife illegally, that you're poaching, that you've taken some intrinsic value away. And they actually explained it's more than just the value of the taxidermist or the value of management per cost per animal or the outfitted trip cost. They're using that to come up with a number. But it also, they look at, how much does it cost to actually manage specific animals. Without the word potential, I think they're going to have difficulty arguing that they can still use that formula. But again, it's a policy decision. If we want to stop collecting restitution on the loss of wildlife, I think that would, that's a policy decision. I'd urge you to vote no on the standing committee amendment and aye on the bill.
Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question on the amendment. The way I hear the amendment, potential could mean the reproductive potential for a six-month-old female who's taken out illegally, and that might be a 15-year potential. So I caution the potential thing, and actually I would stand for the amendment just from that premise alone, because as the good bringer is speaking, he's talking about scientifically based, how they came up with this, and potential does not have science behind it. That is actually the art of prophesying or something else. So I would be for the amendment to strike potential. Thank you.
Chairman Gingrey.
I don't mean to go back and forth, but the only reason they were using the word potential, and that's why in committee I said I don't have a problem with it. It's because when you go over to Title VII, they use the word actual. And so what they're worried about is actual means what were the actual loss. And so the only actual loss potentially to the state is the loss of the license fee. So whatever the license fee would be would probably be your only actual cost that the state has lost. Potential means things that didn't really occur, but they could have occurred if the person had actually gone and gotten a license and do it. It's potential that the person would have gone on an outfitted trip. It's a potential that they would have taken that animal to a taxidermy. It's a potential that they would have spent money in a hotel, those type of costs. That's the word. The only reason for the word potential was to be in contrast to the word actual, which is over in Title VII.
You have heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor of standing committee amendment number 1, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
The standing committee amendment number 1 has failed. We are now back on the bill. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Davidson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 120 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
The Chair is in doubt. All those in favor of House Bill 120, please stand. All those opposed, please stand.
House Bill 120 has failed. Having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Baker.
No.
Barlow.
No.
Berger.
No.
Blake.
No.
Blevins.
Yes.
Flickery.
No.
Brown.
No.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
No.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Coleman.
No.
Connolly.
No.
Davison.
Aye.
Eklund.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Filer.
No.
Freeman.
Aye.
Gay.
No.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
No.
Goggles.
No.
Greer.
No.
Green.
Aye.
Halverson.
No.
Harshman. Harshman.
No.
Harvey.
No.
Hunt.
No.
Hutchings.
No.
Yagi. Yagi. Kasparic.
No.
Kirkbride.
No.
Croker.
No.
Crone.
Aye.
Larson.
No.
Lockhart. Lockhart. Laux.
No.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
Miller excused. Moniz.
No.
Nicholas.
No.
Northrup.
No.
Patton.
Aye.
Paxton.
No.
Petroff.
Aye.
Pipirinen.
No.
Reeder.
No.
Simlick.
No.
Summers.
No.
Stubson.
No.
Teeters. Teeters.
Excuse.
Teeters excused. Throne.
Excuse.
Throne excused. Wallace.
No.
Walters. Watt.
Aye.
Wilson.
No.
Wilson.
No.
Winters.
No.
Zwanitzer Dan.
No.
Zwanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
Yagi.
Excuse.
Yagi excused. Lockhart.
Excuse.
Lockhart excused. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? Winters. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 17 aye, 38 no, 5 excused.
Pursuant to House Rule 6-6B, House Bill number 120, having failed a roll call vote, will be indefinitely postponed. Representative Baker.
Mr. Chairman, privilege of the floor.
So be.
You'll see the pages just passed out a sheet to you. It's from the Wyoming Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife. They're going to be doing another silencer demonstration, so you'll have a chance to take a look at that. Senate File 132 is over in the Senate House right now. This is scheduled for tomorrow from noon to 2, and the reason why I want to make sure that you get this now is they are going to be offering a carpool. So if you're interested in getting a ride to the demonstration, feel free to get a hold of the receptionist out front, and she'll arrange a ride for you.
Representative Coleman.
Mr. Chair, privilege of the floor.
Go ahead.
Okay. In the West and North Gallery, which I had to ask about, part of the reason my son goes to school every day, from Sheridan High School, the freshman girls varsity and JV basketball team and head coach Sean Yager. Please welcome them to the House.
Representative Hunt.
Mr. Chairman, privilege of the floor.
Go ahead.
Thank you very much. Over to your right in the balcony is my dad, Tracy Hunt, also newly minted Weston County Commissioner. So.
Welcome to the House, all of you. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 192. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 192, as introduced by Representative Green, an act relating to motor vehicles, authorizing a special license plate for support of cancer prevention and awareness, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 192, Cancer Awareness License Plates, respectfully reports the same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blake, Blevins, Campbell, Hutchings, Larson, Laux, and McKim. Those who voted no, Representatives Yeagy and Dave Zwanzer. It is signed by Dave Zwanzer, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Zwanzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendations that House Bill 192 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee amendments. And for the explanation on the bill and the amendments, I would like to turn it over to the fine representative from House District 45,
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 192 is just a small cleanup bill, brothers and sisters of the 62nd. A couple years back, we made the wise decision to allow the University of Wyoming to raise revenue through license plates, and a clerical error was made where we left off the Department of Health Cancer Control Program, clearly fixing that little mistake we made. Okay, so let me just say for a second what the Cancer Control Program does within the Department of Health, and then we'll talk about the bill. There should be a handout in your box. It was given like 20 minutes ago. Three-page article. The first one is from the Department of Health talking about what the Cancer Control Program does. The next two pages talk about the license plates for the University of Wyoming. Talk about the Cancer Control Program, the first page first. You see on there that cancer is now the leading cause of death in the state of Wyoming. In 2010, we had 982 deaths within the state of Wyoming. And then at the top of the page, it talks about programs and what the cancer control program itself does for the people. It provides free breast and cervical cancer screenings, free colonoscopies for the low-income, underinsured, and underinsured, and then also allows us to maintain national comparable programs. And that is what the Department of Health Cancer Control Program does. And then the bill, all money has to go to the Cancer Control Program. It cannot go anywhere else. It clearly states it in the statute that it has to go to the Cancer Control Program. The Department of Health cannot move that funding source to another location within the Department of Health. Okay. Now, you may be asking what kind of impact can a license plate have regarding the citizens of Wyoming. And that's why on page 2 of the handout, where it talks about the amount of money that has been raised by the University of Wyoming in 4.5 years. The University of Wyoming has over $500,000 raised due to the license plates that this body passed back in 2008. And now to the bill itself. The bill emulates the University of Wyoming license plate. The University of Wyoming license plate is $100, and if you want to give more, it says a minimum of $100. In this bill, people can donate a minimum of $100 to the Department of Health Cancer Control Program as well. And what we're trying to get at is prevention and then also awareness. The prevention will go to the Department of Health Cancer Control Program, and the awareness will be that people will see that license plate when they drive around our state, and they'll see the cancer. And it's all forms of cancer. I know there's some concern of people in this body that we'd only be supporting breast cancer or trying to combat breast cancer. So it's all forms of cancer that we'll be trying to combat and raise the awareness of our citizenry. So to the bill itself, again, the people will donate the $100, and then they still have to pay the $30 license fee for the bill itself. The bill requires the 1,000 license plates are sold. If we do not sell the 1,000 license plate threshold, the license plate will cease to exist. And then the question was asked in committee, where do you draw the line between creating many more license plates? And for me, that threshold is, do we raise more money, or does it become more of a burden for the Department of Transportation and whichever agency is governing this? And I believe we will raise much more money through the cancer control license plate than it will be a burden to YDOT and to the Department of Health. A few years back, people wondered how much of a burden is the University of Wyoming license plate going to cause upon the county treasurer staff. I went to my county treasurer, the people behind the counter, and I asked, how much of a burden is it for you to process that license plate? And the three people working that day were like, whew, 10, 15 seconds, maybe. So it's not a real burden on the county treasurers. YDOT has already worked out the process of how to accomplish this for the University of Wyoming plate. The people come into the county treasurer's office. They fill out a form. That form gets mailed off. The license plate gets mailed to the county treasurer. The people get notified. They then come in. All the hiccups have already been worked out over the last 5 years with the University of Wyoming license plate, and we're just trying to afford the great people of Wyoming the opportunity to spend a minimum of $100 for the Department of Health Cancer Control Program. Now I would like to address the amendment. On the amendment, this is going to emulate the military tags. We're not going to require the county number being on the tags. So essentially, it's going to be an alphanumeric code, and YDOT and Department of Health will come up with how they want to do that. It just starts with a 1, or they want to put some kind of code in there to signify what kind of cancer you're going for. This prevents some confusion with citations in other states. When people have the county tag and then they have the number code, we've had some problems in our state. YDOT getting phone calls, people getting the wrong citation because we have automobiles, trucks, and different vehicles with the same numbers. So therefore, to alleviate that concern, we're just going to get rid of the county numbering system and follow the military tags that we already have in place. So pending any questions on the amendment, I'd first like to ask for any questions on the amendment.
Representative Zornitzer. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the amendment, I want to make it clear that I am not for the bill, but I am for the amendment, and I would ask you to support it. And this is the reason why, because this amendment limits what we do with the license plates. It does not allow you to have a totally pink license plate or a totally red license plate. It bases it on what we do with the military license plates. And what we do there, we allow them to take off the county number and put an emblem on it. And as we approved in previous legislatures the fact that we could do a military plate, what happened next was then every branch of the military wanted their own military plate. And so our compromise, or what we did to solve that, was to come up that you could put a sticker. And so if you're Army, then you get to put an Army sticker. And if you're Air Force, you get to put an Air Force sticker. And one of the other problems that we were having over the years is we had duplicate license plates numbers. So they have managed now. If you see those, they will start with like an AR or an AF or whatever it may be to distinguish those. So the reason I'm for this amendment, because it limits what we can do, and if the bill passes, we're going to have probably some other people coming, because this is a great fundraiser. I know they say it's a great awareness program, but it's also, you know, a pretty good little fundraiser, because when you have awareness, then it creates fundraising. But it would, and so this is a policy decision. I want you to be aware of that. My thought is with this amendment, then it would allow whoever comes to the state to get their own little emblem that they can place on there. But we will not be having 50 or 60 different license plates, which you see in some of our adjacent states. And I don't know if you've ever seen those, but you have green ones and blue ones, and you're not sure which state it is and what they're trying to identify. So with that, I am on and for the amendment.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has passed. We are now back on the bill. Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was here when the UW license plate was approved, and a lot of the old sages at that time warned us that, you know, this is the old camel getting his nose under the tent. And so we were warned about it. And the chairman of transportation also was in that class. And I think, if I'm not mistaken on my record keeping here, that this is about the 67th one of these requests that have come through. And fortunately, most of them have not survived the legislative process. When I think of these license plates and all of the different causes and the different interest groups and the different, you know, they're all worthwhile and stuff, but I kind of wonder if bills like this is just a poorly veiled attempt to try to emulate our neighbors to the south of us and to the north of us. one time, the last time I remember arguing about or debating these kind of issues, I think we found documented testimony that our neighbor to the north at that time had 52 different designs on their license plate. And they further talked about the fact that when you go into the treasurer's office in that state north of us, the treasurer's got a display of all the different license plates, and you wait in line to buy your license plate, and you the treasurer, whoever's working there, will point to the wall with one of these laser beams and say, which one of these do you want? And then in the lower right-hand corner, there's a plain old license plate. The other 51 of them are the kind of thing we're talking about here. You know, prior to this break in tradition 5 years ago when UW's plate came in, and by the way, I was here when that happened, and I don't remember. I think maybe the sponsor might have embellished the fact that this was an oversight, and there was no talk of this cause being mentioned at the time. But anyway, prior to 5 years ago, we always had a tradition since 1918 of having a single, uniform, easily recognizable license plate. And that was in contrast to a lot of trends that were going around where they were really trying to turn the license plate into a fundraiser. And it looks to me like we're kind of going down, if we haven't gone already, we're going down that route right now. You know, and if that's what we want to do, I would suggest let's just admit we want to make a mini billboard out of the license plate, and we'll allocate a 2.5-inch by 2.5-inch square, and you can go in and advertise anything you want, as long as it's not obscene and it doesn't isn't offensive to somebody. I don't know why I can't, you know, have a license plate that popularizes bluegrass music or something like that. I mean, what difference does it make? But anyway, this has other real implications, seriously. I mean, it complicates the numbering system. We've got a pretty uniform numbering system. You drive down the road and you can kind of, you know, relieve your boredom by looking at what counties this license or this vehicle came from, by looking at the license plate. This obliterates that. This kind of takes that away. I think it causes confusion among law enforcement officers in trying to, identify license plates quickly and identify the state they come from. It's not just our law officers in Wyoming, but all throughout the country. I wonder how much trouble that is for some of these states, like the one to the south of us and the north of us, that have so many different ones and so many different colors. The state to the south of us, they tell me, they on good authority, that they like to have a design that isn't green because of innuendos about the people that live there and things like that. Another thing, really, maybe I'm just old-fashioned here, but, you know, surveys show, and I can't identify where that came from, but surveys show that Wyoming has probably one of them, well, it does have the most distinctive license plate among the entire 50 states. And it's been resilient for years and years, until about 5 or 6 years ago, where there was a slight aberration in the color, but the design and the number of the county was still there. And so it's been distinctive. It's been resilient. We've got a dependable plate. And perhaps that's somewhat responsible for the collectability of Wyoming license plates. If you go on to that electronic auction in cyberspace, you will find, if you search for Wyoming license plates, they're collectible. And I just wonder, you know, if we keep doing this, you know, who's going to be next? And, when are we going to get to the point where we just throw up our hands and say, well, we're going to be like every one of these other states, sell out the license plate, admit it's not an identification for a vehicle, but it's more of a billboard, and just kind of open it up to whoever wants it. So I urge that in the most serious way I can to not approve this bill. Thank you.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, was here when we passed the University of Wyoming plate, and I heard the story about the camel getting his nose under the tent. And there was a lot of people who spoke against that very measure, but it has been a huge, huge success. And then we talk about our military plates. I've been on transportation every year I've been here. People talked, we don't want that. We don't want to give that. I saw downstairs in the parking garage, there's NA number 8, I believe it was. Well, I know that gentleman was from the Navy. So I find it interesting when a car goes by me, MC, Marine Corps, AF, Air Force, AR, Army, CG, Coast Guard, CG number 1's on the other end of the hall. I think it's a great idea. We're going to keep the plate. You're going to know it's from Wyoming. It's going to be the same background as everybody else. We're going to have a logo, and it's going to help people be aware to prevent cancer. Please vote for this bill. Thank you.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just think it's a great bill and a good idea, and why not?
Representative Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And true, we have about 10 or 11 plates that recognize military veterans, but we have more people in Wyoming that die from cancer than have died in wars. And I think it's great that we recognize our veterans. They've served our country well, and they have sacrificed on foreign lands and seas. But there's battles being fought here in Wyoming, and not just by veterans and other men, but by women and children, too. And I think we need to recognize those battles. And I'm on in favor of this bill.
Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise against this bill. And, of course, I have been there. As you realize, we only have one university in the state. And it was a very good deal that we did let the nose under the tent in that area. And I do believe we owe a great respect to our military people. And I think we've done it very well. But we are at that stage of the policy decisions is really, are we going to let the tent blow away? What the next step will be, that we'll have to have different divisions in the cancer, because as we all know, it's a very serious disease, and some people are very astute about which type they have. And, of course, they want the money to go to that type of support. And then, of course, we're going to get all the other deals. So I just want you to know that the gate has been opened. It has been opened. But the question is, now that we've let a couple out, do we want to let any more out? Because if any more go out, I can guarantee you the whole herd goes. I can guarantee you the whole herd goes. So that is your policy decisions you have to think about. And thank you.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I apologize to my good colleague from Johnson County. He didn't catch on my sarcasm about the clerical error that was made about cancer control. I apologize. I'll be more overt next time with the lightheartedness of my introduction of a bill. I apologize. And I would just like to address some of his points, some of his questions about are we going to have 54 different plates like our neighbors to our south. Ladies and gentlemen, in the bill, and currently already in statute, you already have to have 1,000 plates or the license plate ceases to exist. I personally prefer to conduct a cost-benefit analysis, much like a bill we have, which we're going to have to conduct a cost-benefit analysis of every regulation in our state. And I look at what is the benefit and how much revenue is going to be raised by such a license plate. And I would argue we will raise a lot of revenue for the cancer control program. There are not many people within the cancer control program in our state. We fund some of those programs. Some is funded through the CDC. I don't know if we'll get $500,000 in 4.5 years like the University of Wyoming, but we will get a significant amount of money into that program to fight the number one killer within our state, which is cancer. And I will stand for any other questions or just support of the bill.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Zwanitzer's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 192 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The chair is in doubt. All those in favor, please stand. All those opposed, please stand. I'm standing. House Bill 192 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 15. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill Earl, number 15, as introduced by Representative Gingrey, an act relating to mandatory reporting of violent injuries requiring certain health care practitioners to report specified injuries to local law enforcement authorities, providing contents of the required notice, prohibiting interference with the required reporting, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, the committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 15, Violent Injuries Reporting Requirements, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Barlow, Coleman, Filer, Harvey, Kasparic, Throne, and Wilson. Those who voted no, Representatives Green and Reeder, signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Harvey.
My apologies, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation that House Bill number 15 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and I'll turn the explanation of both over to the good representative from the tall, beautiful mountains.
Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To understand this bill, the bill pretty much is not the bill anymore. What you need to do is look at the Standing Committee Amendment. That's the bill. So find your Standing Committee Amendment, because that'll help you understand the bill better. So here's the issue in regards to gun violence. In most states, if you were to go into an ER and you have a gunshot wound, that is a mandatory report to law enforcement. The bank robber has just walked into the ER and we found him for you. He has a gunshot wound. And that's pretty normal in quite a lot of states. Most states have adopted also mandatory reporting on knives, axes, or other sharp-pointed instruments, non-accidental. So when someone knifes you, that's a mandatory report to law enforcement. And then some states, not a majority, have adopted assaultive or abusive conduct. When a person comes in where all their bones are broken or they've been beaten in some way, those are normally mandatory reports. We are one of only four states in the nation that has no mandatory reporting of any type for any type of violent injury. So right now, if you were to walk into an ER with a gunshot wound, that would not be reported. There's not a mandatory report. So when I originally wrote this bill, it was to require mandatory reporting. And some people came forward with some concerns about making going that far to mandatory. So what the bill is, it's all mays. It's all they may report. And here's why that's still an important issue. Under HIPAA, and HIPAA is the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, what's really important under HIPAA is you must, there's what's called protected health information, your PHI, protected health information. That is the information about you as a patient that is protected. You just can't walk into a hospital or a doctor's office and say, you know, tell me all about Keith's medical issues. Those are protected. So right now, doctors have to be careful what they reveal about someone's medical condition. So what some concern is that if you came in with a gunshot wound or a knife wound or you were beaten, the doctor actually has a quandary as to can he call the law enforcement to let them know, or does he run the risk of violating HIPAA? So under the HIPAA law, they actually thought about this, and they said if your state has a law that allows you to report violent injuries, then HIPAA does not apply. So by us passing this law, the doctor will be free to report if he so chooses, and he will not run afoul of the HIPAA law. So the first part is, so it starts with, if you look on the Standing Committee Amendment starting in line 19, in compliance with HIPAA, anyone in the ER or any doctor or anyone like that, they may, and may is important, it's on line 26, they may report, so it's totally up to the doctor if they so choose, any person suffering from any wound or other physical injury inflicted by the person's own act or inflicted by another where the injury is by means of a firearm. So if a person comes in with a gunshot wound, whether they did it to themselves or someone did it to them, and if they did it to themselves, that's actually also good because by notifying law enforcement, then what can begin is what's called a Title 25 involuntary procedure where you help that person by getting them to the state hospital. The second part is dealing with knives and other non-accidental wounds from sharp objects, and that's a may also for the doctor. Again, both of those are just giving the doctor the ability to do that. Then the third one is any person suffering from any wound or physical injury as a result of assaultive or abusive conduct. And this one was an important one to work out an issue with some of the people who deal with domestic violence. This one's very important. It says if the victim agrees. So it's a may, first of all, with the doctor, and the victim has to agree to it. Because in many cases, what the doctors were concerned about was if it is that the doctor may report it, will people who are being subject to domestic violence still seek treatment? And so in this way, that solves that problem. The victim would have to agree to it. Normally what happens is a doctor will sit and talk with the patient and say, you know, A, I think you need to get to a safe house, and B, I think we might need to bring in law enforcement to talk to you if you'd like to do that. And sometimes they agree, and other times it takes two or three different incidences before the person finally takes advantage of that opportunity. We did take out some things out in the Standing Committee Amendment. So right now, all they have to do is call law enforcement and let them know the name of the person, that where they're about, where they are, you know, we're at the hospital, and the character and extent of their injury. We had in there the identity of the person who did it to them, but that seemed to put too much burden on the doctor to do that. So that got taken out. And so that is the bill and the Standing Committee Amendment. And I'd urge you to vote aye on the Standing Committee Amendment and on the bill.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In one of my other lives, working for doctors and hospitals is what I do. There, as the good chairman says, there's actually three laws that govern confidentiality. There's HIPAA, there's the Wyoming Hospital Records Act, and there's 42 CFR Part 2. And we have a compulsory process that requires all kinds of steps before you can release information. And so doctors find themselves in a really bad spot. And one of the things that I do is defend lawsuits for wrongful disclosure of confidential medical information because the hospitals didn't go through the hoops that they had to go through to release the information. And they're surprisingly common because they're easy lawsuits to prove. Somebody knew something that they weren't supposed to know. Where did you find it? Find out. The only people who knew were the doctors and the hospitals. So folks come in with these tragic injuries all the time, and the doctors have a hard time releasing that information. Frankly, I like the bill better without the standing committee amendment, but understand the reasons for the standing committee amendment and so support that. I would urge you to vote both for the bill and for the standing committee amendment.
You have heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor and say aye. All those opposed, no. Standing committee amendment number one has passed. We are now back on the bill. Is there any further discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Harvey's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 15 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill number 15 has passed committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 146. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 146 is introduced by Representative Wilson, an act relating to athletic trainers, limiting use of title of athletic trainer, providing exemption from licensure for student athletic trainers, limiting terms of licenses, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, your committee, number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 146, Athletic Trainers Licensure, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Barlow, Coleman, Filer, Green, Harvey, Kasparik, Reeder, Throne, and Wilson, signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 146 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment and turn the explanation of both over to the good woman from Laramie County.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring you all a bill that you will all like because it has no sunset dates, no eminent domain, and no tax exemptions. If it's acceptable, Mr. Chairman, I'll explain the bill first and then the amendments because it'll make more sense that way.
Please proceed.
Okay, if you're a sports fan, depending on your favorite sport, you probably see as much of the athletic trainers as you do of the players, except for this weekend, which sadly is just the Pro Bowl, which hardly counts. But concussions, lost teeth, torn ligaments, that's their field of work. We don't have a professional sports team here in Wyoming, but we do have 71 trainers who provide preventive care and treatment for sports injuries in high schools, community colleges, the university, and our few semi-professional teams. So athletic trainers, just as background, they must have a bachelor's degree in the field. Many have a master's degree. They have a national licensing organization, and in order to obtain their national certification, they must pass a national board's exam. So in 2009, this body, with our colleagues down the hall, established a board to license athletic trainers in Wyoming. So that's already accomplished. Now that the board has been in operation for 3 years and they can see what's needed, there are a couple of changes. So there are three changes to the current statute in the bill, and then I'll bring up the amendments. The first change is on page 1, line 16, and this is just to remove license from that place because it was later in the paragraph. The way it was originally phrased, it suggested that you might have licensed athletic trainers and unlicensed athletic trainers, but just like you can't have licensed veterinarians and unlicensed veterinarians, this change just makes it clear that being called an athletic trainer requires a license. So that's just a wording change. The second change is on page 2, line 7. Again, there was just a word left out originally. It was meant to say any person serving as a student athletic trainer is given the title of athletic training student, and they left out students. So it sounded like if you were an athletic trainer at a school, you were a student athletic trainer, which was not the case. The one that actually has any substance to it is on the bottom of page 2, changing the terms of the license from 3 years to 1 year. And the board, like many of the other boards, is set up to be self-sustaining, so given that there are not that many athletic trainers in the state, the fee for a 3-year license is $600. And in addition, they pay dues of $200 a year to the National Licensing Board. So after several years of experience, the board is seeing that, especially for the younger trainers who don't get paid all that much, to cough up $600 at one time plus their $200 to the national fee is kind of a challenge. So they'd like to go to 1-year licensing so that it's a little bit cheaper at a single time, and also then their licensing cycle will match the national cycle. The the changes and the amendment are on page 1, line 3, changing the word limiting to modifying. And I have to say, I guess some lawyer decided we are modifying and not limiting, so okay, fine. On page 2, line 24 and page 3, line 1 should be read together. We just took out the words from the date of issuance. The problem there was just that when they started the board, we had some people that got their license in June and some in July. And if we do go to an annual thing, there was a little bit of a problem with, well, what if you have the person and they have to renew in June, but the new period doesn't start till July? How are they going to handle that? And we figured the board can handle that. We don't need to specify that there. We'll just let the board handle that. And then the last part of the amendment is page 3, line 4. And the board just requested that instead of July 1st, it be made effective immediately after all the paperwork is handled, just so they can get the new procedures in place, because most of the licenses expire in July, and they wanted to have everything there so they'd be ready. So unless there are any questions, I will call for the question on the amendment.
Question having been called on standing committee amendment number 1, all those in favor say aye. All those opposed, no. Standing committee amendment number 1 has passed. We are back on the bill. Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Harvey's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 146 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill number 146 has passed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Chairman, I move the committee of the whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The motion has passed.
The reading clerk will read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg to leave report as follows. House Bill 63, recommended do pass. House Bill 65, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 66, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 85, amended. Yeah. Well, I can't even. And further amended, sorry folks, recommended do pass. House Bill 150, recommended do pass. House Bill 120, following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. House Bill 192, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill 15, amended, recommended do pass. House Bill number 146, amended, recommended do pass, signed by Representative Walters, Chairman.
I move the adoption of the committee of the whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Committee of the Whole report is adopted. Congratulations, Representative Walter. Without order of business of messages from the Senate.
Message number 179. Mr. Speaker, the Senate did concur on House amendments to the bill listed below by the vote indicated. Senate file number 104, Education State Administration, ayes 21, noes 9. Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk, Jack consent to LSO for enrolling.
We're at that order of business of signing of enrolled acts. The reading clerk will read the enrolled act.
This is from the Senate, enrolled act number 1, the original Senate file number 104, an act relating to government administration.
I am about to sign enrolled act number 1, being original Senate file number 104. I have so signed. We're at that order of business of standing committee reports.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 4, Education, to whom is referred House Bill 230, School Safety and Security, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye. Representatives Connolly, Freeman, Hunt, Northrop, Patton, Piperinen, Summers, Teeters, and Paxton, signed by Representative Teeters, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom is referred House Bill 131, Game Fish Definition, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Blevins, Davison, Freeman, Gay, Halverson, Hutchins, Yeagy, Crone, and Piperinen, signed by Representative Davison, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom is referred House Bill 161, Outdoor Advertising Fees, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representative Blake, Blevins, Campbell, Hutchings, Yeagy, Laux, McKim, Reeder, and Dave Zwanitzer, signed by Representative Dave Zwanitzer, Chairman.
With that order of business of re-referral of bills, Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move to re-refer House Bill 230 to your committee number 2, Appropriations.
Without objection, it is so ordered. We're at that order of business of committee announcements. Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 3, Revenue, will meet Monday, January 28th. At 8 o'clock a.m. in room H11, where we'll be discussing House Bill 96, Elections, Ballot Access and Registration, and House Bill 141, Political Party Affiliation.
Chairman Berger.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 7, Corporations, will convene on Monday, January 28th at noon in the Hirschler Building, B63. The bills we will be hearing are House Bill 169, Marriage Definition, House Bill 168, Domestic Partnerships, Rights and Responsibilities.
Any other committee announcements? Representative Kasparek.
Mr. Speaker, for re-referral to Committee Number 2, Appropriations from Minerals would be House Bill 176, School District Natural Gas Fueling Facilities.
Without objection, it is so ordered. Chairman Davison.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet at 8 o'clock Monday morning to discuss House Bill 157, Game and Fish License Residency, carried over from today, and House Bill 37, Hunting License Raffle.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee, Labor, number 10, will meet Monday, January 28th, 10 minutes after adjournment in room H-17 to discuss bills House Joint Resolution 2, Social Security Benefits, and House Bill 97, No Abortion After Heartbeat.
Vice Chairman Kasparek.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet Monday, January 28th at 8 a.m. in H-18 to consider the following bills: House Bill 223, Public Records Institutions of Higher Education; House Bill 214, Hospital Special Districts, Boards of Trustees; and House Bill 212, is carryover from today, Impact Assistance to Local Governments.
Representative Crone, does the Judiciary Committee have any announcements for committee meetings on Monday?
Mr. Speaker, I don't believe we're going to be, we may be meeting at noon on Monday, Mr. Speaker, but I don't know what bills. That'll be great. Mr. Speaker, we've heard about country lawyers. I'm a caveman lawyer, as you can tell by...
Welcome out of the cave.
Thank you very much. Yeah, Judiciary Committee number, your committee number one, Mr. Speaker, will meet Monday upon noon recess. We'll be reviewing House Bill 204, Katie's Law, continued from this week, House Bill 200, Concealed Weapons Government Meetings, and House Bill 216, Deadly Weapons in a Courtroom. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Vice Chairman Crone. I sure didn't know, with all the emails we're getting, I sure didn't want to miss that announcement. Representative Walters.
Mr. Speaker, privilege of the floor.
Please.
In the balcony to this side, I'd like to introduce my wife, Katie. She came down to spectate today. Thank you.
Welcome to the House. Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 4, Education, will be meeting Monday upon adjournment in H-10 for consideration of House Bill 165 and 166.
Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Certainly.
Committee 99 is going to meet at 6 o'clock at the depot, so hope you can make it.
It's an important committee meeting. Don't miss it. Are there any other committee announcements? Any other privileges of the floor? Good work this week. Get lots of rest this weekend. We've got a full slate next weekend. There's lots and lots of bills to go. We just got four more introductions, so there's 127 bills in the hopper. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Mr. Speaker, a couple reminders. Monday the 28th at noon is the last half day for House bills to be submitted. And you have a memorandum in your inbox about the finer points of that. Friday, next Friday, will be the last day for bills to be reported out of committee. And a week from Monday, February the 4th, will be the last day for committee of the whole. And figure on a couple of long days next week. I don't see any way out of it. One more thing, just a heads up for those who may want to anticipate it. I think we're going to do the budget beginning February the 11th. So if you want to get through the budget, get your budget amendments drafted, why, there's a heads up that gives you some time to get prepared. General file for Monday, House Bill 93, 94, 152, 191, 26, 71, 81, 173, 177, 155, 156, 18, 123, 201, 203, 199, 130, 164, 208, 209, 230, 131, 161, 179, 182, 55, 176, 147. If we can get all those done Monday, it'll sure help the rest of the week. With that, Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole, where am I? I move that the House adjourn until Monday, January 28th, 2013 at 10 o'clock a.m.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House is adjourned until Monday, January 28th, 2013 at 10 a.m.